The Micro Language Lab, Learning the 6809, is a presentation of Green Mountain Micro.
Hello again. In this third lesson, we reach a critical point, the point of explaining the whys and wherefores of the 6809 microprocessor. You should have spent some time getting familiar and comfortable with binary and hexadecimal counting, as well as with the arrangement of ASCII characters. The workbook provides some exercises and self-tests. Please complete them before continuing with this lesson. Especially if you're a first-timer to assembly language, that's very important. There are many general ways in which microprocessors are described and defined. They're called smart circuits. They are calculating devices. They are, as I've said, a microscopic nest of electronic switches. Microprocessors are all of these things and more. I'll use several terms interchangeably throughout these lessons. Processor, microprocessor, or MPU, central processing unit, or CPU. In your color computer, these all mean the same thing, the 6809 microprocessor. Inside all microprocessors, inside all MPUs, are a number of data holding stations called registers. More about the term register later, but at the heart of the microprocessor is a special calculator register, formally called an arithmetic logic unit, or ALU. The ALU holds one binary word, that is, a certain number of binary digits of information. I'm talking here about the 6809 processor. Since it accepts data in an 8-bit binary group, it accepts data in what's called, by the tongue-in-cheek name, byte. The word size, then, of the 6809's binary data is the byte, 8 bits. To describe it another way, the 6809 has 8 wires connected to it for data. All 8 wires become live simultaneously, conducting 8 binary digits to the processor. This information, 8 binary digits, 8 bits, is 1 byte. So the 6809's got this arithmetic logic unit, the ALU, which holds one byte of data. The ALU can then perform simple calculations with that byte of data. The calculations, which I'll get back to in detail shortly, are addition, subtraction, and multiplication. Also, there are incrementing and decrementing, which are essentially addition or subtraction by one. The ALU can perform logical operations such as AND, OR, NOT, and exclusive OR. Finally, it can make a comparison with any other byte of data. Most of the processor's hard work is done in the ALU. In fact, the 6809 is such an advanced processor that it contains 2 separate ALUs. Each one can add, subtract, increment, decrement, compare, and perform logical operations. Together, the 2 ALUs can be used to multiply. The arithmetic logic units in most MPUs, in most processors, including the 6809, have several descriptive names. They are called accumulators. The ALU is also called an accumulator register. Finally, the 6809's own pair of accumulators are labeled A and B. So the arithmetic logic unit, the ALU, the accumulator, and the accumulator register effectively mean the same thing. In the 6809, they mean where the math is done, in A or B. These A and B accumulators get the information they need by loading it. Loading, that's the term for obtaining data. The accumulators save the results by storing data. Load and store. Get data, save data. I have to answer several questions at once now, because the actions that they represent are so intertwined. Here are the questions. How does an accumulator load or store data? Where does it load data from? And where does it store data? I'll start with the where. The data the accumulator needs might be inside the microprocessor in another register. The term register is, in fact, quite general. The A and B registers of the 6809 are the arithmetic logic units, the accumulators. But there are other registers also capable of holding information, though these registers cannot by themselves do any mathematical calculations with the data. Their main purpose is to keep information handy for the accumulators. However, the most important place the accumulator obtains its information is from memory. Memory is a line of storage locations outside the 6809 processor itself. Each memory storage location can hold an 8-bit word, 1 byte. I'll back off from that briefly to tell you how an accumulator loads or stores data. It follows the commands of an instruction decoder, that part of the processor which determines the actions the processor is to take. Now here's where my answers get intertwined. The instruction decoder gets its instructions from the same memory that stores data. In other words, when the instruction decoder gets a byte from memory that says, load something into the accumulator, the next byte in memory is that very something. It all comes from the same line of memory. Recall the last lesson. I said that the 256 possible rearrangements of binary digits represent all the information the processor will ever need. Instructions, numbers, ASCII characters, whatever. That's precisely true. I also said that it's the context that determines what the binary pattern means. Context is what assembly language programming is all about, ordering the bytes so that they turn into a useful program. So far, you know that the processor, the MPU, gets both its instructions and data from memory. The next questions, then, are how does it distinguish them? That is, how does it understand their context? To discover the answer, you must know that the memory locations are each uniquely numbered starting from zero. These identification numbers are called addresses. How many memory addresses a given MPU has available are determined by the number of its address bits, again binary digits or bits. In keeping with its total logical binary nature, the 6809 has 16 address bits. The total number of rearrangements of 16 binary digits is quite large, unlike Sherlock Holmes's 5 binary digits, which can be arranged in 32 combinations, or the data binary digits, which can be arranged in 256 combinations. There are 16 binary address digits from 00000000000000000000 to 11111111111111. And this number is 65,536 combinations. That's what you call 64K, since a K in computer terms is 1,024. 64K. Get a pencil and paper. Breaking the numbers into groups of 4 digits, write down 00000000000000000000. That's 16 zeros. Now, elsewhere on the paper, write down 16 ones. Also break those into groups of 4. 1111, 1111, 1111, 1111. Above each group of 4 binary digits, write its equivalent hexadecimal symbol. For the 16 zeros, the hexadecimal value would then be dollar sign. Remember, dollar sign says hexadecimal. Dollar sign 0000. Also write down the hex value for 16 ones. Again, dollar sign. Dollar sign FFFF. What you have just written is the address range. That is the number of individual memory locations available to the 6809 processor. Hexadecimal 0000 running through FFFF are all the addresses of the 6809 MPU. If you would like to take a short break, this is probably the time to do it. You have just identified the 6809 processor's address range. Knowing now that the 6809's addresses run from hexadecimal 0000 to FFFF, you are ready to discover how the 6809 MPU distinguishes the instructions it performs from the data it uses. The 6809 goes through a fixed set of electronic actions whenever the power is turned on, or whenever the reset switch is pressed. The processor first does its internal housekeeping. It requests the contents of the memory at address hexadecimal FFFE, and following that, it requests the contents of memory at address FFFF. Now follow carefully here. There are 2 bytes obtained from memory. The 2 bytes loaded from memory locations FFFE and FFFF are concatenated, that is, combined end to end. A byte is 8 bits. 2 bytes end to end are 16 bits. 16 bits, as you recall, happens to be the same size as the 6809 processor's address. Now, that's something that didn't happen by chance. In fact, those 2 bytes are used as the address of the memory location containing the very first instruction the processor will follow. I'll repeat that. When the power is turned on, the 6809 fetches the 2 bytes stored at memory locations FFFE and FFFF. The processor concatenates them, producing a 16-bit value. That value is used as an address, and at that address is found the first instruction the 6809 must execute. That address is put in a special 16-bit register called the program counter. From that point on, until the power is turned off, the program counter, called the PC, always keeps track of the next instruction the processor is going to follow. If the programmer has done a good job, the computer will begin executing the thousands of instructions that make up its language or operating system. It's time for a summary of all this. I'm using microprocessor, MPU, processor, central processing unit, and CPU interchangeably. Inside the 6809 MPU are 2 arithmetic logic units, or ALUs, which each hold a single 8-bit word of data and perform simple calculations on that byte of data. The ALUs, also called accumulators, are identified as the A and B registers. The registers load bytes of data from memory and store bytes of data in memory. There are 65,536 memory locations available to the 6809 MPU, and from them it gets both its instructions and data. The instruction decoder inside the MPU tells it what operations to perform in response to an instruction byte loaded from memory. The program counter register, the PC, keeps track of which instructions are next in line. If you feel comfortable with this information, please continue with this tape. If any of it's shaky, start the lesson again. You might want to follow along in the text while reviewing the lesson. What I'm discussing in this lesson is the 6809's architecture. That's the term for logical organization within the processor. The water's about to get a little deeper, and I'm going to throw you in, so get ready to swim here. Along with your documentation, there is a Motorola data booklet for the MC6809E processor. Find the booklet, which you should already have out, and turn to page 5. Data booklets like these are meant for programming and hardware professionals, so much of it will initially appear incomprehensible. That fogginess is a trademark of data sheets. We'll be concerned with the last 2 paragraphs on page 4, the first 3 on page 5, and most importantly, figure 5. Take a moment to locate those. Look first at figure 5. So far, you've found out about the program counter, PC, and the A and B accumulators. As far as you can see, there are actually several more registers. The X and Y registers in Figure 5 are effectively identical. They are called index registers because they act sort of like your index finger in a card file, pointing to a specific entry. Remember that registers are special data storage locations inside the processor. Each of these 2 index registers is 16 bits in size. Because X and Y registers are 16 bits, they can be used to point to a specific memory location, that is, to be indexed to that 16-bit address. Indexing is the most common function, but not the only use. Here's an example of indexing. Let's say there's a message to be displayed on the screen. Now, you recall the screen is memory. So, I'll point my Y register to the video screen memory, and then point my X register to the memory that contains the message. My program can then tell the A accumulator register to get a byte of data from the memory location indexed by X and put it in the memory location indexed by Y. Load A accumulator from memory indexed by X and store A accumulator to memory indexed by Y. The first letter of the message is then displayed. It's like telephone directory assistance. The operator indexes the number, the telephone transmits it, and you index it on your phone pad. Now, in this example, if I increment both X and Y registers by 1 after displaying the first letter of the message, that is, if I add 1 to the present values of X and Y, they will be pointing, respectively, to the next locations in memory. I can have the program repeat the process of loading memory from X and storing to memory indexed by Y. That would get the next letter of the message and display it in the next position on the screen. Load A from X indexed memory, store A to Y indexed memory. I've got a program to do that.
Find program number 5 in the book and follow the instructions. This is a basic program. Turn this tape off until you are ready to load the program. Turn the tape off now. You should have loaded a basic program. List this program and compare it with program number 5. If it appears correct, please continue with this tape. Otherwise, rewind the program and try again.
Run this program. A message printed by BASIC will appear on the screen. The screen will be cleared, and the message will appear again, this time printed by the machine language program I've just described. Now, I feel bound to prove that I'm not fooling you with some basic manipulations here. So, once you've run the program the first time, hit break, and then delete it. Just type new to clear out the program. You can list it if you feel that maybe I'm still playing some tricks. But now, I say smugly, type EXEC, 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 and hit enter. The message reappears, partly obliterated by an OK. To see the whole thing, enter these two lines. Line 10, exec, EXEC, that is. Line 10, EXEC. Line 20, go to 20. That's it. Line 10, EXEC. Line 20, go to 20. Now run that. And there's the message. Well, have some fun. Try changing the program. Hit break. Now enter this. Poke 16001, 128. That's poke 16001, 128. Enter. And the next one you want to poke 16012, 130. Poke 16012, 130. Enter that. And run. You can poke 16001 with any number from 0 to 253, and you can poke 16012 with the previous number plus 2. For example, hit break. Poke 16001, 0. Poke 16001, 0. Enter. Poke 16012, 2. Enter. Poke 16012, 2. Now run the program again. Take a break here to load and run the next program when you've done. When you run it, notice that it expects you to input a hexadecimal number this time.
This is program number 6. You must have loaded and run the previous program before using this one. Turn to the book and follow the instructions. This is a basic program. Turn this tape off until you are ready to load the program. Turn the tape off now. you should have loaded a basic program. List this program and compare it with program number 6. If it appears correct, run the program now. Otherwise, rewind the program and try again. After you have made several runs of the program, continue with this tape.
You've run the program and seen a number of curious screen displays. What you've done is simple. You redirected the X register, which was pointing to the message I stored in memory for you, to somewhere else in memory. You can see that it takes very few changes to spy anywhere into memory with even that short machine language program. Return to Figure 5 in the MC6809E data booklet. At this point, I have introduced the A and B accumulators, the program counter, PC, and the X and Y index registers. Again, if you feel you might need to review, this is the time to do it. Turn your attention to Figure 5 and notice the bottom register marked CC, the condition codes. This special register gives the processor a limited intelligence. Also called the flags, the condition code register contains bit-by-bit information about the processor's activities, what the processor does, and what the results indicate. In the beginning of this course, the flags of most interest will be the carry-borrow flag and the zero flag. In this lesson's first program example, I had the A accumulator load a value from memory indexed by X, and store that value in memory indexed by Y. And I transferred a message from one memory area to the screen memory. My program did that for exactly one screen full of information, which is 512 bytes. I actually should say that my program did that for exactly hex 200 bytes, which is an easier number to work with. But how did my program know how to stop at hex 200 bytes? Turn to your documentation book for this lesson and follow along with me as I describe a little more precisely how this program operates. Step 1. Load X register with the immediate value of 0600. This is the address where the message is stored in memory. Now, Step 2. Load Y register with the immediate value of hex 0400. This is the address where the screen begins on the color computer. So we've got X and Y pointed to memory locations. Step 3, load A accumulator from memory indexed by X and automatically increment the X register by 1. That gets the value from the message and bumps the X register to point to the next one for the next time around. Step 4, store A accumulator. Now it contains the byte to display. Store A accumulator to memory indexed by Y. That's the screen. And automatically increment the Y register by 1. Now that moves it to the next displayable location when that's done. So at the end of this step, there is a character on the screen. X, having been incremented, now indexes the second letter of the message, and Y, also having been incremented, indexes the second location on the screen. What I would like the program to do is somehow check to see if the job is finished. Here are the questions to consider. When would the job be finished? The job would be finished when the screen is full. And when is the screen full? Well, that happens if Y has been incremented one step at a time past the last screen position, and X has been incremented one step at a time past the last letter of the message. Okay, when is X past the last letter of the message? Well, that would be when it reaches 0800. Now, if that's not entirely clear, remember that the message started at 0600, and we want to display 200 bytes. So 600 and 200 is 800. So when we get past 800, we know we got past the message. So the actions of step 5 become clear. Here's step 5. Compare the X register to the immediate value 0800. Compare is a microprocessor instruction which does what might be called a ghost subtraction. The only purpose of the ghost subtraction's result is to discover if the value being compared with is higher, lower, or equal to the register being compared to. Both original values remain unchanged. No actual result has been produced, but the result of the comparison can be discovered by the 6809 processor in reading the condition codes. Here's how it goes. If the register's value is greater than the value being compared with, then the ghost subtraction results in a non-zero positive number. Both the carry borrow flag and the zero flag are reset, turned off, that is. If the register's value is greater than the value being compared with, the carry borrow flag and the zero flag are turned off. Now, if the register's value is equal to the value being compared with, and the result of the ghost subtraction is zero, turning on the zero flag, saying there's a zero result, but leaving the carry borrow flag off. When the register's value is equal to the value being compared with, the zero flag turns on and the carry borrow flag turns off. And finally, if the register's value is less than the value being compared with, then the ghost subtraction results in a negative but non-zero number. The carry borrow flag goes on and the zero flag goes off. Once again, if the register's value is less than the value being compared with, the carry borrow flag goes on and the zero flag goes off. Well, how does that fit here to this whole discussion? At this point, I'm going to do something I like to avoid, and that's to explain assembly language using similar basic commands.
Find program number 7 in the book and follow the instructions. This is a basic program. Turn this tape off until you are ready to load the program. Turn the tape off now. You should have loaded a basic program. List this program and compare it with program number 7. If it appears correct, please continue with this tape. Otherwise, rewind the tape and try again.
This is a short program, and I'd like you to list it before you run it. In case you've never used BASIC's peculiar notation for hexadecimal, it's not the dollar sign you'd expect. It's ampersand H. That's that and symbol. It's ampersand H. Now, in the 6809, X, Y, and A registers are not variables. This program uses variables, but they're not variables. They're memory storage locations, so let's not confuse them, even though I'm probably going to confuse them with this example. I'm using the names X, Y, and A here just for visual effect, but follow this through. In line 10, X is hexadecimal 0600, the first memory location of the message. In line 20, Y is 0400, the first memory location of the screen. In line 30, A takes the value indexed by X. Here I use peak to create the effect of load accumulator, and X is incremented by 1. In line 40, A stores its value at the location indexed by Y. Here I use poke to create that effect, and Y is incremented by 1. In line 50, the comparison is done. X is compared with 0800 hexadecimal. If it isn't 0800, then the program isn't done, and it branches back to line 30. Run the program. It does, quite slowly, exactly what the machine language program did. To finish this lesson, load and examine the source code that follows on this tape.
Find program number 8 in the book and follow the instructions. This is an EdTASM Plus program. Turn this tape off until you are ready to load the program. Turn the tape off now. You should have loaded an EdTASM Plus program. List this program using the P command and compare it with program number 8. If it does not appear correct, rewind the tape and try again. This is the end of Lesson 3.